Welcome in, folks, to the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN. As always, I'm here, Tyler O, but in the driver's seat. I am playing host as Herms is out watching and scouting college players, getting you the info that you need to dominate your leagues. And in his stead, I've brought on my good friend John from DLF Football and Dynasty Workshop, one of the sharpest college prospect analysts I know. Glad to have you on, John.
Thank you, sir. I'm so disappointed. I'm not at the Senior Bowl this year. I've been there the last three seasons, and it's a blast. I've been there with Herms. We always have a great time. He's definitely holding down the fort for us doing that. But yeah, it's always such a fun time of year. The Senior Bowl, you know, you get guys like Jackson Dart who dart up, you know, draft boards and things because of the Senior Bowl. And then, you know, next thing you know, he's a stud in the NFL. So it's always a fun time to see who stands out, who does what and all that kind of stuff. But I always do like to pump the brakes a little bit because people get a little overhyped with some of those Senior Bowl players too, a la maybe like a Jack Besh or something like that. And so we got to pump the brakes a little bit too. But it, once again, a very fun week.
And, while you're here, I got to give you a little bit of kudos here, John, because this is a Jackson Dart podcast, right? We've been some of the ones pounding the table on Jackson Dart. And while I will admit, I was on him very early, you got me on him actually well before I was on him before a lot of other folks. So want to give you the credit here. Wanted to also let folks know, like, hey, John knows what he's talking about. He's been right a lot. About some really, really in-depth players, some players you might not be thinking about. He puts a lot of time and a lot of research into this, so figured I'd get him on here early. The point of this show is to simply be like, hey, we know not every single one of you, not every single one of these listeners lives and breathes college prospects. You might watch the games, which is great, but there's a deeper dive that you can take to really get you that edge, and the hope here is to kind of set the stage, kind of give you that intro. So you can settle in and really start taking in this 2026 class and start forming those opinions. So as the year starts moving on, whether you're doing some best ball or you got your rookie drafts, you're just starting on the right foot here. So let's kick things off here. Something I noticed last year that was a little bit different than other years was we had a running back, Ashton Jeanty, as the 101 in not only single QB leagues, but also super flex. And that's not normal, right? That's going to be something that I would say is uncommon in super flex leagues, is to see a running back go one-on-one no matter what. I'm seeing running back Notre Dame Jeremiah Love. Now, I don't think anyone's going to argue that he is the RB1 overall, which I think was almost the same argument for Jeanty in some ways. But wanted to get your opinion on, A, how do you view Jeremiah Love? Maybe let's kind of compare him to Jeanty in terms of a prospect, and then B, are you keeping them at the 101 even in super flex leagues?
So just going back to last year, you know, obviously Jeanty was a great prospect. You know, I think for every year people get a little crazy when you're talking about the top prospects because they fall in love with them. And it's so much fun, especially if you start watching the tape and doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I know, what's tape, what's film, but you know, you start falling in love. Even if you're just watching the YouTube highlights, you start falling in love with these players. And next thing you know, you go, I have to push this player up. And I think that's what happened with Jeanty. You know, not to say that he isn't great, not to say that he can't still be great in the NFL. But, you know, especially once we knew where he was going and things like that, it, like there was a lot of red flags and there was a lot of reasons to say, hey, he's not my 101. Excuse me. And so he was actually never my 101. My 101 was always Tet McMillan. I mean, I'm talking about for like two straight years. You know, obviously I do the Debbie thing. I do everything, you know, related to college football, and I pay attention a lot to that stuff. Tet McMillan was always my 101. And then everyone just started pushing Jeanty over him. Well, I feel like we're kind of doing the same thing this year with Jeremiah Love. And it's not that he's not a quality player. It's that he is not, I don't know if he's a true workhorse running back. He's not small, but he's not big. You know, he's kind of like in between. He's closer to a Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, level of player, you know, where you're probably a 1A compared to just a 1, that kind of thing. But I don't think he's a Jahmyr Gibbs level of player at the same time. He might be close. He might be similar. I don't think he's quite Jahmyr Gibbs. So, you know, when it comes to that kind of player, I mean, he's my 102 in this draft. So, like, I'm not saying I hate him. He's terrible or anything like that. But, you know, for people saying, hey, he's absolutely the 101, do I mind you taking him at 101? No. Is he absolutely my 101 no matter what? Also, no.
I love the way you put that, too, because I also feel people would call you crazy for not putting Jeanne T at the 101 last year, right? And right. Although he's clearly deserved to be a top 3 pick, I think we look back on it and be like, you know, there's – all things said and done, like even the Superflex probably should have taken Jackson Dart over him. Honest to God, like Tep McMillan makes a really good case. Like you can make the case for other players. That's why it's so important to just kind of think a little bit differently when it comes to these rookies. Fair to say though, that Jeremiah Love is your clear RB1 in this class though, correct?
100%. In fact, he's the only RB that's ahead of, and I don't want, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but he's the only RB ahead of tier 4 in this class. Okay. So, you know, tier 1, tier 2, 3, there's only one RB that's not in tier 4 or lower for me, and it's Jeremiah Love. And that just goes to show it's not the greatest RB class. And that's, you know, why people are pushing Love up even more, because it's not the greatest RB class. So they're saying, you got to get the RB1 at 101. But, you know, we can get into the whole, you know, are you really fixing a rebuilding team with the running back and, you know, that kind of thing. And if he does get drafted in the top half of the, you know, of the NFL draft, like he's being projected to right now, the top half of the first round, I should say, is he going to land in a bad spot, you know, a la Nash and Jahmyr, where it takes a couple of years, that kind of thing. Obviously we'll have those answers in a few months, but you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't mind him being up there, but you know, just say that he's the only one that could be considered is a little crazy to me.
Let's shift over to quarterback real quick. You know, we can, you know, maybe get to some other running backs another time, but Fernando Mendoza, clearly the best quarterback in this class, but I also kind of want to get your take on him in terms of where you feel comfortable taking him. Maybe how does he kind of fall like in the overall like dynasty rankings? Because it's easy to get excited or possibly get ahead of your skis with Mendoza. Incredible story. There's going to be a movie about this guy and him winning a national championship in like 10 to 15 years. Easy, because you just the stories write themselves. I haven't, you know, maybe earlier in the season, I wasn't necessarily totally impressed with it, but like clearly like he's playing some really good football around a really good team, and he beat some really good teams. He was clutch. Kind of just wanted to get your sense, like, all right, Fernando Mendoza, he's the QB1, but where does it kind of stand in terms of, you know, the greater quarterbacks across the NFL landscape? It's pretty set in stone. He's going to be a top pick in the NFL draft at this point. So wonder if you just kind of talk briefly about like Mendoza, thoughts on him.
So even going into like getting close to the college football playoffs and everything, I still wasn't completely sold on Mendoza. You know, he was right at the thresholds I look for like big time throw rate and intended air yards, meaning he's not quite pushing the ball down the field as much as I would like him to be. And he's not making as many big time throws as I would like him, or he's right there at that line where it's like, you know, he kind of is, but he's not really breaking the threshold. Honestly, I feel like he got better throughout the playoffs. And so, you know, I went on record. I had a listener of the Debbie Devotional, you know, kind of yell at me and say, hey, you know, a month or two ago, you said that you felt like a good comparison for Fernando Mendoza was AJ McCarron from like, you know, 8 years ago or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I did. You know, it was like a backup level QB, you know, could possibly start, things like that. He's like, well, now you're kind of, you know, talking a little different. I said, yeah, he's played better in the playoffs, and he's changed my mind. So I still don't know that he's going to be some stud. You know, I'm not comparing him to a Drake May or, you know, or that kind of level of quarterback or anything like that. But I do think he's a starting level QB, you know, that you can draft, you know, for the appropriate team. That being said, I don't know that he's ever going to be like a true game changer or anything like that. That's going to be, you know, the QB5 overall for, you know, dynasty or anything like that, you know, but he could easily be the QB13 overall. the QB 15 overall or something like that and still, you know, be valuable and viable for, you know, dynasty teams and super flex teams, of course.
And then I'm kind of curious, you know, I think the easiest way to just like compare, you know, compare classes to last year's class just because it's fresh in everybody's brain. But Cam Ward, Fernando Mendoza, do you have a clear winner?
So it's one of those things where you're comparing ceiling and floor.
Okay.
You know, Ward always had the ceiling, but he didn't quite have as much floor as Mendoza. Mendoza has a little more floor, not quite the ceiling. So it's kind of like, do you want the safer player who has probably better odds of starting and lasting and all that kind of stuff? Or do you want the player that could possibly be like huge when it's all said and done? Now, I've always gone with the safer player. So, like, you know, I wasn't the biggest Ward fan. You know, I always had Dart ahead of Ward, but that doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with Mendoza. But like I said, Mendoza's just right on that line of like, he doesn't really do a lot of rushing, but he has a little bit of mobility. You know, he's not really going to break the mold or break the game for you, but he's probably not going to lose the game. And he probably could be, he probably will be a starter for at least a handful of years when it's all said and done, just because of the, you know, the investment that these teams are going to put into him, the Raiders or whoever it ends up being. They're obviously going to invest a lot into him and hopefully surround him with the talent. You know, being that we already have a year of Cam Ward and seeing, you know, how that's kind of already, you know, at least somewhat failed. Not to say that he, you know, didn't do anything or look okay or anything like that. But, you know, I think I would lean Mendoza, but that's me leaning the safety versus the ceiling once again.
Fair enough. Let's shift over to the wide receivers because, I think we talked about the top running back. I feel really good about Jeremiah Love. Talked about the top quarterback, Fernando Mendoza. Pretty set in stone. But there's a group of three wide receivers. If you're scrolling, you know, Twitter or social media or just trying to like grasp onto some rookie conversation, there's going to be three wide receiver names that are going to keep coming across. And that's going to be Mekhi Lemon, Carnell Tate, Jordan Tyson. Those three wide receivers are going to be the three that I see a lot of people talking about as the wide receiver one in this class. Things can change. This is recorded in the end of January. But in terms of people saying, hey, the best wide receiver in this class is, I hear Lemon, I hear Tate, I hear Tyson. Help us make some sense of that, John.
Honestly, I feel like this is just, people being a little scared of the Tyson injuries. You know, honestly, if Tyson never gets hurt, I don't think anyone can make a case against Jordan Tyson. But unfortunately, he tore his ACL in year one. He actually was going, he was on pace to do an amazing or have an amazing season on a team that won, I think, one game or two games or something in Colorado, his true freshman season. I don't even think a lot of people even realize he played at Colorado because they kind of just, you know, like push that all aside. He tears his ACL. He misses his second year. He doesn't play at all in his second year. And then he transfers over to Arizona State. He starts playing, blows up in his true junior season, technically his redshirt sophomore season, completely just blows up, looks like the greatest thing that you've ever seen. And then at the end of the season, he gets a shoulder injury. So he misses the last week. I think it was either the last week or last couple of weeks because they made it to the playoffs. So he missed a couple of weeks in the playoffs. But it was the last week of the regular season and then obviously a couple of weeks in the playoffs. You know, obviously they don't make it too far. They don't make it to the championship game, which maybe things would have been different. Now you get to his junior season and he looks like the same player. He's just doing great things. And then he gets a hamstring injury. So he misses a couple games. He comes back at the end of the year. But now the QB was gone at that point. He got hurt. So there's a lot of ambiguity and a lot of like up in the airness and stuff with him. But if you just look, they're not connected at all. You know, the knee from 2022 isn't the reason why he had a hamstring injury this past season and missed two games or three games or whatever it was. And, you know, the shoulder for a couple weeks, you know, never isn't related to anything as far as I'm concerned. So if they were somewhat related, I would be more concerned. But as far as I'm concerned, Jordan Tyson is the 101 overall and the wide receiver one, or I should say it the other way around, the wide receiver one and the 101 overall for me. He's the only player that I think could truly be like a game changer, a la like a Malik Nabers or, you know, somebody like that. in this draft class. Everyone else there, there's quality players here in the wide receiver core or wide receiver, players in or prospects in this draft class are going to save this draft class because there's not a lot of great prospects in the other positions. So the wide receivers are the strength here, but I think Tyson stands above. And so, yeah, people are trying to push Lemon ahead. People are trying to push Tate ahead. But I think it's more of just being scared of, well, what if he gets hurt? You know, that kind of thing. And just ignoring the true ceiling of who he could be if everything does, you know, if he does stay healthy and that kind of thing. Now, that's just not to say that I don't like Tate and I don't like Lemon. I just think that they're more of a probably a wide receiver two for NFL purposes and, you know, and probably more of a wide receiver two or maybe even a wide receiver three for like fantasy purposes. And so I'm not going out of my way to draft them at 101 or anything like that.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And before we break down further some of these wide receivers so far, seems like Jordan Tyson is the clear wide receiver one for John. We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere, as John will reveal his other wide receivers and top players in the first round of your rookie drafts.
Yo, 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 how's it hanging? CH Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast here to ask you a question. Have you wanted to get in on some NFL action, but don't live in a state that has a sports book? Well, we have great news. Our newest partner, Novig, is America's number one sports prediction market, offering better odds than sports books in over 35 states. If you're looking to tail some of our plays for the NFL playoffs and all sorts of other sports, new players on Novig can get a free month of an FTN GOAT subscription when they sign up and use promo code FTN with their first purchase. Plus, you'll get 50% off your first purchase up to $25 in Novig cash. All you gotta do is download the Novig app, enter code FTN before making your first purchase of $50 or less, and the discount will automatically apply. Also, your promo code for that free month of an FTN GOAT tier will be in your email inbox before you know it. What a deal! We look forward to having you play on Novig with us this year. Be sure to check it out and use that promo code FTN.
Welcome back to the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN. Joined by my friend John, we are breaking down the 2026 rookie draft class. Let's jump back into things. So if Jordan Tyson is your wide receiver one, two questions. Who is after him, Lemon or Tate? And does Love, Mendoza, and these three wide receivers round out your top five?
Yeah, so I have Tate next, and he's kind of surprised me. I always thought he was going to be, just from what the film grinders were telling me, it wasn't even really what I was seeing per se, but a little bit of what I was seeing in his freshman and sophomore seasons. It just seemed like he was kind of going to be not as athletic as we wanted him to be, not necessarily taking over a game like we'd want him to. And you can point to who he had on, you know, in his wide receiver core that he was, you know, as far as competition, and Jeremiah Smith, you know, even Emeka Egbuka before. But once Emeka Egbuka went onto the NFL and it became the Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate show, Tate really took a step forward this year, and things changed. His yards per reception went up. You know, his yak went up. It seems like he's kind of taken a step forward as a player, and you know, maybe even, I don't know if he hit the gym a little harder or whatever, maybe even gotten a little more athletic than we thought. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see what happens at the combine, but as of right now, I have him as my wide receiver two. I have Lemon as my three. I don't hate Lemon, but when people go out of their way to like push Lemon up to 101 and their wide receiver one and all that kind of stuff, it kind of, and then I sit there and I push the brakes and I go, hey, he's my wide receiver three. I'd probably take him at like 105 or something like that. People start going, hey, you hate this guy. You know, he's terrible. And I'm like, I just don't know he has the ceiling. He's a slot first player. He was in the slot 71% of the time in his college career. Honestly, he started getting a little bit less in the slot towards the end of this junior season. But before that, I mean, he was more of an 80% slot player over the rest of his career. Lower A dot. He just barely broke the 10 yard A dot threshold this season, where he started having some better games. And so he is showing that, you know, maybe he has that in him. I don't know that he, that it's all there. I don't know he has that intermediate route running tomorrow. Like he's going to go and just be a stud, you know, at any part of the field for an NFL team or anything like that. And that's why I kind of lean more towards him being like a wide receiver two, wide receiver three for an NFL purposes, at least in the beginning. You know, it might take a couple of years, but at that point, you know, you can invest in somebody like a Tyson and profit, and then you can go get a Lemon if he does kind of take that step forward at some point.
Would in Superflex leagues, like obviously let's talk about Mendoza. Like he's a serious player here in Superflex. That's why we play Superflex. Are these your top five? Like, do you feel pretty confident that like these are the top five players? And is that a tier break for you or is someone coming in there?
No, I think this year there's a very clear tier break. That is my top five. And, you know, after that, you know, you can really start poking some holes in prospects and things more so than almost any other year. This is the year where you want to either get up to 105 or earlier or kind of drop back and maybe get, you know, extra picks or go to future years and things like that. And it's not to say there's no good players. There's no quality players. You know, you're not doomed if you can't trade back or anything like that. But there's a lot of landmines in this draft class. And I think that's kind of my goal is to let people know, hey, more important than even getting the player that you pick right is just avoiding those landmines, not picking the wrong player.
Let's actually shift gears. I'm curious about the landmine. So we talked about the top five. We feel pretty good about that. Jeremiah Love, Fernando Mendoza, Lemon, Tate, and Tyson, right? Those are kind of your safe bets. Not saying they're all going to land, but I'm going to give you a list of the next five names I have here. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say this is like, you know, the my ranks, but just kind of names that I'm going to throw out there. Who would you say are the kind of biggest landmines here after those top five? Let's go Denzel Boston, Jadarian Price, Jonah Coleman. So Denzel Boston, wide receiver, Jadarian Price, running back, Jonah Coleman, running back. Let's go KC Concepcion, wide receiver, and they'll sort of tie it in there. Kenyon Sadiq. Where are the landmines there?
Oh, all right. You probably named three, but honestly, there's two big ones there, and it's Denzel Boston and Kenyon Sadiq. If you listen to a lot of podcasts right now, before someone mentions Kenyon Sadiq, they're always going to say, in tight end premium. And the reason why is because Kenyon Sadiq is not a great prospect right now. This is not a great profile that we would normally have in the first round. People are pushing him up because, A, if you go look at a picture of him, the dude's rocked up. I mean, he looks like somebody you want to be good at in the NFL. Like, he looks like he should be amazing and all that. Like, it kind of reminds you of, like, Jonnu Smith from back in the day. And that's kind of the comp for him is he could be Jonnu Smith. Well, I mean, we've seen the ups and downs of Jonnu Smith. This was not a player you wanted to draft in the first round of your rookie drafts. I've never been wowed by Sadiq. He has a lower A dot. It's kind of come up, but he didn't really ever take over. He's never surpassed 500 receiving yards in any season, and he's a senior. It's just not a profile that I'm going to be drafting in the first round of any draft class. And then you can basically say the same thing about Denzel Boston. Did absolutely nothing for 2 years. And then all of a sudden, now, you know, people will point to they had at Washington, they had Roma Dunze, they had Jalen McMillan, they had Jalen Polk ahead of him. And that's why he couldn't get on the field. Well, you know, that's fine. I'm not even holding the first 2 years where he did absolutely nothing against him. But in his junior and his senior years at Washington, he never surpassed 850 receiving yards. He honestly, my comp for him is N'Keal Harry. He doesn't seem overly athletic. He doesn't really do that many amazing things. He does score a decent amount of touchdowns, which is great. But, you know, a Terrace Marshall, N'Keal Harry, that kind of player comes to mind. We're like, yeah, they can score touchdowns in the college because you're playing against college players. You start going up against these more athletic corners and linebackers and whoever else in the NFL, next thing you know, you're not making those contested catches. You're not doing, you know, the big things that you're doing in college. So both of those are players that you will not find me touching in the first round at all. You get in the second round, maybe I'll make a case for them. The problem is people are pushing them up higher and higher every week. And I really do think, at least for now, the way it seems that people are going to be drafting them in the first.
And then let's talk about Price and Coleman, obviously those are going to be our two next running backs up. You mentioned that you do not have any other running backs besides Love out of tier four. Just so people have a little bit of an idea of what that looks like. Is there a world where you're drafting Jadarian Price or Jonah Coleman at the end of the first and feeling good about it?
Maybe just because of the draft class. They're actually my next two running backs. So Coleman and then Price are really close in my grading, but it for very different reasons. You have Jadarian Price, who is a very explosive athlete who never really got his shot because he was behind Jeremiah Love. He also tore his Achilles his freshman season, missed a year because of that. Obviously, you know, probably took time to get back to 100% health. And then when he was 100% healthy, boom, you have the best running back in the nation on your team. So, you know, that doesn't help you. The problem with Price is he has no receiving profile whatsoever. So he's an athletic running back who, you know, has a lot of burst and speed and things that we love, but doesn't have any kind of receiving profile to where we can say, hey, he could be a third down back. He could be a three down back. He can be whatever. So it's really going to take the right fit in the right team for me to fall in love with that. Then you have Coleman is like the complete opposite. He's just a bruiser. He's huge, like 130 something pounds or 230, not 130. That'd be bad. Woo! 230. Yeah. 230 something pounds. He has a receiving profile. Honestly, I was somewhat excited about him going into the year, but it was kind of like I needed him to take a step forward to break more big time runs and do things like that this year. And he just never did it. He started off the season pretty hot. People start saying he got hurt and things. Honestly, I think they just started playing better talent. They started playing better teams. And then you saw who he really was. He really wasn't breaking any big plays towards the end of the year. He, honestly, like 2 yards per carry in a lot of these games and stuff. So I'm not trying to hate on Coleman. But once again, I think it's going to take the right fit. And it's just he's not overly athletic. So I don't think it's going to be a player that I'm really excited about. And someone's almost always going to draft him, him ahead of me, I would say, because there's a lot of people saying he's my RB2. And guess what? He's my RB2 as well. But I think I'm still like saying, hey, I'm going to draft him in the second round, not the first.
So my question is, you know, I've gone over some landmines, you know, I feel pretty good about like the top half of the draft roughly, John. Like, you know, let's wind down the podcast here and get a sense of like closing out the first round for you. So kind of like that, let's say you have the 106, the 107, the 108. You know, what are some names that, like, obviously you mentioned it, like there's a big tier at the 105, right? But, you know, just like me, it's like you might have some 106s, you might have some 107s, whether it's where you finished or maybe you traded for future draft picks, and that's just the way it goes. So, you know, let's just say, you know, you're at 107, 108, like a couple names right now as of January, you know, end of January here, like who are you targeting in that range? Who do you feel decent about grabbing?
Well, the good news is for us, I can sit here and say there's all these landmines and all that, and we can avoid them. But, you know, that doesn't mean your league mates are going to avoid them. So hopefully they're going to be drafting the Denzel Bostons and the Kenyon Sadiqs and the Ty Simpsons and players like that. And we're going to avoid that. And they'll still get, you know, the good players will get pushed down. But you mentioned Casey Concepcion before. You know, he's a player that really took a huge step forward in year three. He really went from like a gadgety, like Luther Burden-esque player to looking like someone who could really play inside and out and possibly be a future stud in the league, especially if, you know, he makes it to the right system. Elijah Surratt, if you watched him for Indiana, if you watched him in the college football playoffs at all, you know, you saw a player who gets open at will, just silky smooth. You know, he had a weird college career because he actually transferred up twice. So he transferred levels twice to get to Indiana. He started off at FCS. Then he goes to James Madison G5 program. Boom. Then he goes to Indiana. And every time he did it, he was a stud. He doesn't have any down seasons. He always did. The weird thing about Indiana is they actually switched how he played though. Mm-hmm. Last year, he was a slot only player, I should say, or slot, mostly a slot player. And so he really didn't play on the outside that much. His A dot was a little bit lower. They used him that way. This year at Indiana, they moved him to the outside. and he was a completely different player. His ADOT goes up, his yards per reception goes up. And so it's kind of weird because you're like, well, why did that happen? But the way I see it is that shows me versatility. That shows me a player that can play at every level of the field. And that's what I want to see. So I'm probably the highest person on Elijah Surratt out there. Honestly, like I might push Surratt ahead of Lemon when it's all said and done. And I know that sounds insane to a lot of people, but I really have them very similar in my grading there. Casey Concepcion's a little bit lower than that. Omar Cooper Jr. is also on Indiana. and so he's also honestly, like, he was the same thing where he was on the outside last year. Then they played him on the inside this year. And kind of showing the same thing. And I don't know if it was just the coaches trying to, you know, mess with people's minds or if they were trying to figure out where they play best or whatever it is. But Cooper played as the slot receiver this year. And I mean, he showed that yak ability. He showed everything that you'd want to see. And then, you know, the player that I call like the least sexy wide receiver in the nation, but he just seems to do well every season. He seems to, you know, be a bigger name, and he's projected to get pretty decent draft capital, and that's Jeremy Bernard. He from Alabama. And like I said, he's just not sexy at all. He's not going to go wow you at the combine or anything like that, but he's projected to be like a mid second round pick, and you know, and teams seem to love him, and he just seems to do well wherever he's at. And so he's a player that I'm like, you know, I don't love him, and I definitely don't want to draft him in the mid first, but you start getting into like the back end of the first, and I can, you know, especially depending on where he lands and everything, I'd say, hey, you know, I could take him and just feel that safety of I'm going to have a pretty solid player there.
These are great names to be tossing out there. Cause I look at Bernard, I look at Cooper. I look at there's another one, Surratt. These are all players, if you know, take a look at, say, like Fantasy Pros ECR, they're back end of the second players, right? And basically, John's point here is, like, these are three names that we need to be talking about because you're, you know, roughly comfortable with them at the end of the first, which is, this is why we have you on the show. This is why we kind of talk through these players. It's like, who are the talking heads? Who is the consensus not talking about? Because if there's one thing that I know about evaluating rookies, it's like, you know, we're not great at it. It's tough. Things happen. People are wrong all the time. So, like, why not take some of these swings that you feel better about after evaluating them year after year? One of the last questions I kind of want to ask you here, John, before we get rolling and out of here, is just maybe name a player or two that it doesn't have to be necessarily deeper than those guys that we talked about, but a couple names that you're like, all right, like, nobody's talking about them now, but come, you know, March, April, people are going to be talking about them, and they're going to, you know, warrant, you know, a higher move or a higher draft pick, just kind of, you know, risers or players that you foresee being risers as we approach the combine and the NFL draft.
Yeah. Well, like we said, you know, Herms is at the Senior Bowl right now, and you know, there's going to be players getting that Senior Bowl bump. And I just warn people, like, I don't think this is a very good tight end class, but there's a lot of tight ends that are getting hyped. And so I would just, you know, say, like, if you see a tight end getting kind of pushed in the first round, even if, especially if someone goes, oh, because of tight end premium, then I would just say, like, you know, hold your horses, pump those brakes. Although I do think Justin Jolie out of NC State is a tight end that I think he's already moved up. Honestly, like a month ago, if you went to NFLMockDraftDatabase.com, he was in the 400s as far as like where they had him in the class. Now he's at 101 as far as like projected draft capital and things. So he's already moved up 300 spots just in the past month. And honestly, I think he's going to continue moving up. I really like him. He's not the biggest guy as far as height. I think he just weighed in, and his official measurements were 6'3", 251. So, I mean, he's got great size, not necessarily the greatest height, but, you know, we've seen other players, you know, like a Harold Fannin and, you know, measuring pretty similarly recently and be just fine. And Jolie has the greatest production profile of any tight end in this class. And then probably my favorite sleeper that like no one seems to be talking about, maybe a couple people here and there on Twitter, like mention his name every once in a while, but I don't understand why no one talks about Eric McAllister out of TCU. I get that people are scared off because of TCU wide receivers. Sure. They just probably overdrafted Jack Besh last year. Quentin Johnston, they probably overdrafted a couple of years prior. And they're like, hey, I'm not falling for this one again. But my comp for Eric McAllister, and it's kind of a lazy comp, but it's honestly the one that makes the most sense to me. If you look at their numbers, they actually are pretty damn close. And my comp for Eric McAllister is Quentin Johnston with hands. So imagine if Quentin Johnston could actually catch the ball on a regular basis, you would probably be okay with that player, right? And McAllister's another one that was in like the 400s as far as, you know, where he was being valued as a player in the class. He's already kind of, it's been volatile. It's kind of up and down, but he's moved up all the way to like 150 in the class. Now he's dropped back down to 199. But I think once he goes out, he's probably going to crush the combine. And the dude is fast. The dude is athletic. So I have a feeling he's going to be like a third round pick when it's all said and done for the NFL draft. And if that happens, I think he's going to skyrocket up boards, and he's a name that you should try to get ahead of the game on. Because honestly, I feel like I would take him probably like the early to mid second right now. The way things are going, if he ends up getting better draft capital than what he's being projected right now, I might even push him into the late first.
Dude, love that take. It's always good to hear something that goes against the grain, because that is seriously not a player or a take that people are talking about. So just kind of sum it up here, folks. Jeremiah Love, best running back in the class, not a lock for the 101. Mendoza's the number one quarterback, feels pretty safe. Top three wide receiver group, but deep at wide receiver. Not a good class to need a tight end or a running back for that matter. John, feel free to correct me if I was wrong there, but any kind of parting thoughts about this class? Whether it comes with tier gaps or needs that a like kind of a team might be looking for before we jet.
No, like I said, avoid the landmines, avoid the narratives. You know, I went back on this last podcast that we did, I went back and I looked at like some of the narratives that were going around, and it just seems like people catch on and everyone starts saying the same thing, and it doesn't always make sense. For whatever reason, people started talking about Roma Dunze a couple of years ago would have been the wide receiver one in any other class. And that wasn't true for me at the very least. But like, you know, you start looking at it like, would he have been in the wide receiver one in any other class? Like, I don't think he would have been. But people just ran with it. Ashton Jeanty is generational. People started running with it, you know, and I think we start looking at these other players like your Matthew Goldens, your A.D. Mitchells, and it's like they might do great things at the combine. They might be run a 4.3, but they were terrible in college. So let's not fall in love with them. Let's not, you know, fall in love with the narratives, because that's the people that are kicking themselves right now aren't the people that took Jackson Dart 202 in this draft class. It's the people that took Matthew Golden at 201. You know? Those are the people that are really mad at themselves. So don't fall for the Denzel Bostons. Don't fall for the Kenyon Sadiqs. Don't fall for the Ty Simpsons, your Chris Bells, your Chris Brazels. I'm trying to name all the, Zachariah Branch. Zachariah Branch is projected to get like 43rd overall draft capital right now. Do not fall for it. I almost never say do not draft a player, but do not draft Zachariah Branch. I don't care where he is. Unless he's in the third round or fourth round of your rookie draft, do not draft them. So, I mean, I could probably go another 10 players deep with my do not draft list.
We'll have you back. We'll have you back, John. We'll do a do not draft list spot for that, man.
Yeah, but yeah, just avoid the narratives and just don't fall for the landmines. And obviously, I can help you. Tyler can help you. Herms can help you with, you know, avoiding those and finding the right guys. And we will be here throughout the process.
All right, man. Appreciate the time. Always great to sit here, talk through the rookie prospects, just any football in general with you, my friend. Before we jump on out of here, obviously wanted to give you that opportunity here to plug the Twitter or the X, plug the work. Where can people find you? As it is that time of the year and you're one of the best.
No, I appreciate that. I'm Dynasty Coach A on Twitter. I'm the host of the Devy Devotional Podcast, where we talk about these rookies constantly throughout their college careers. And then obviously now we're doing mock drafts and things of our own throughout those times. And then I own dynastyworkshop.com. And I have every tool you could possibly need for dynasty, rookies, everything. And the big, obviously the big focus right now is all the rookie profiles. I have all the important metrics for these players. Basically, like, if you want me to tell you who to draft, I have that. If you want to tell me who you're going to draft, I also have that. You can look up your own stats. You can look up my ranks. You can look up all that kind of stuff. And it's all on dynastyworkshop.com.
Awesome, man. Really appreciate you. Really appreciate the time. Excited to continue these conversations as we get rolling. Make sure you tune in. The Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN, is just getting started. We are not taking a break because the season is coming to an end. We will continue to feed you great content, whether it's just general football, fantasy football, whether it's going to be rookie, dynasty. We are here every week to continue to help you win and get those championships. For John, for myself, excited to have you around next time. Don't forget, tell somebody you love them. Later. Think about it before we go, just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping.